You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for coming. My name is Richard Bush. I'm the director of the Center for East Asian Policy Studies here at Brookings. It's my pleasure to welcome you all here today. This is a bittersweet moment for us in the center because my three colleagues who have been with us for the last 4 months are about to leave to go home. We've enjoyed having them with us. They've been an excellent group, and I think they've worked very hard on their projects, but we're very pleased to have this opportunity for them to present the findings for the projects that each of them has worked on. And so that's the structure of today's event. Each of them will take a few minutes to present present their findings. We'll have a little bit of discussion amongst us, and then we'll throw it open to the audience. So our first presenter is Junming Jung, who is an associate professor at Tungji University in the School of Political Science and International Relations. And his focus is on North Korea and the United States and China. So,
thank you, Richard, for your kind introduction. It's my great pleasure and an honor to be here. I know most of our audience here might be interested in hearing about disputing issues about recent tensions in East Asia, especially those disputing issues like Diaoyi Sankaku Islands and IADs. However, what I'm talking about today is not centered on these disputing issues, but on how to establish an analysis framework to explore some critical security challenges in East Asia, especially those happening in Korea Peninsula. In the following 10 minutes also, I would like to have a brief introduction on a hypothesis of security competition I developed in one of my research papers. And I try to use this hypothesis to analyze the North Korea nuclear issue. After that, I would be happy to have further discussions with my colleagues and finally take some questions. In the discussion and the Q&A section, I would touch upon the East Asia, East China Sea issue, including disputes over Diaoyi Sankaku Islands between China and Japan. I define security competition as a phenomenon when states have competing visions of security objectives and pursue different and at least partially contradictory approaches to realize them. Security competition lies in somewhere between security cooperation and security dilemma. Differing approaches by key stakeholders to the North Korea nuclear issue is a manifestation of the security competition among some of them, especially the two players, the United States and China. First, these major players have competing visions of security objectives, including regional peace, state stability, alliance relationship, security assurance, unification, and denuclearization. Some objectives are overlapping, while others might be conflicting. For example, China, the United States, and South Korea, each would be happy to see North Korean abandonment of nuclear weapons program. But North Korea has long been pursued like capability. Second, for some countries, the pursuit of some objectives might be contradictory to the pursuit of other objectives. For example, the United States and South Korea tend to increase military deployment and strengthen alliance relationship in response to DPRK's aggressive actions, which in turn makes North Korea take even tougher a stance on the pursuit of nuclear capabilities, and as a result, frustrating the effort of denuclearization. So these players tended to have different hierarchies of preferences. China prioritized regional stability, finding a diplomatic and peaceful solution, denuclearization, and maintaining its traditional bilateral relationship with North Korea. The United States wants denuclearization with or without stability, and either through regime collapse of multilateral diplomacy. South Korea prioritizes denuclearization, stability, and unification. In addition, the perceived priority of its security objectives and interests might be changing under the circumstances of the transformation of the security environment domestically, regionally, or internationally. Fourth, they tended to pursue different approaches to realize these objectives, increasing economic sanction, military deployment, or military exercise has been the routine responsive way of for the United States and South Korea, while China tended to call for all parties concerned taking self-restraint actions to prevent that the tension from deteriorating. China in the past has hesitated to implement comprehensive sanctions for fear of bringing about the issues of refugees, defectors, and social disruptors in North Korea. Fifth, misperception and miscalculation among major players will add fuel to the security competition and significantly contribute to the deadlock in the nuclear crisis. In many cases, both North Korea and the United States have exaggerated and or misrepresented the threat that the other side posed to it. China, in many cases, have been reluctant to take hardline policy against the North, partly because China worried that the U.S. might be taking advantage of the nuclear crisis to strengthen U.S.-led alliance and increase military deployment in East Asia, and unilaterally reach out to China also has also feared the U.S. would renounce its non-proliferation commitment and unilaterally reach out to North Korea, exactly as what Clinton and Junior Bush did to India after India's going nuclear. Given the fact that the U.S. is unfolding its rebalancing strategy, China would disappoint if North Korea becomes the next Burma when the U.S. defects. Sixth, for these major players, security competition in other areas, like those in Taiwan, East China Sea, or South China Sea disputes, would affect their perception and calculation of the interests and the objectives in addressing North Korea nuclear issue. For example, the United States and China's hedging strategy toward each other would lend North Korea a leverage to manipulate and even hijack the two major powers to serve Pyongyang's narrow interests. If we explore the previous nuclear crisis, we would find that major players did face a series of contradictions as indicated in the hypothesis of security competition in their ways to address the nuclear crisis. However, the past experience also told us that it is possible for these key players to seize competitive ways so as to reach security competition and avoid the transformation from security competition to security dilemma. In achieving the goal of denuclearization, first of all, it is imperative for the key players in the nuclear crisis to build mutual trust in their perceived security objectives so as to avoid misperceptions and suspicions. Secondly, a combination of carrots and sticks would be conducive to induce North Korea to accept denuclearization after its rational calculation of costs and benefits. Thirdly, a stable and coordinated moderation of security competition would be helpful in persuading Pyongyang to accept denuclearization. And fourthly, it is practical to for the key players in the nuclear issue to return six-party talks. And the September 19th agreement in 2005 as a new starting point of the multilateral negotiation. Finally, it is necessary for the key players in the nuclear crisis, especially the United States and China, to initiate discussion on how to cooperate and respond to some potential unexpected scenarios, so that those scenarios would not bring about even more adverse consequences.
Okay. Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Huang Jeho, Jeho Huang. He's the Dean of the Division of International Studies at the Hankook University of Foreign Studies. His presentation will stay on the Korean Peninsula, but look at South Korea's relations with China. Jeho?
Thank you, Richard. Recently, with Japan's right to collective self-defense, China's declaration of new ADIZ, and North Korea's number two Jangsung text, sudden execution, the tensions in the region is more heightened before. Korea is directly or indirectly related to these incidents, especially the brutality of North Korea's execution of Jangsung Tech has aggravated instability on the Korean Peninsula. Needless to say, the preparation with the United States as an alliance is extremely important. At the same time, cooperation with China, the strategic cooperative partner, is also very important. With President Park's successful state visit to China last June, it was concluded Korea-China relations has very much improved. However, with the recent declaration of China's ADIZ, it has been questioned. The trust between China and Korea has not fully established. Therefore, what kind of relations do Korea and China have each other? If there were difficulty with Korea-China relations during Lee Myung-bak period, are we confident Korea-China relations during Park-geun-hye government will be different? The development of Korea-China relations will have a major impact on prevention and reduction of crisis from North Korea, as well as other challenges facing Korea and China. Even at the time of difficulty between two countries, generally healthier relationship will allow for better management. If this type of cooperation is possible, the relationship will greatly contribute to peace and stability in Northeast Asia. The relationship between Korea and China has elevated every 5 years since the diplomatic relations in 1992 and was elevated to a strategic cooperative partnership in 2008. The meaning of the partnership is mutual trust and mutual cooperation from economy, society, culture, politics, and security at the bilateral, regional, and global levels. It can be defined as maintenance of a stable, long-term cooperation among partnership countries. In order to be that kind of a partner, the countries must be able to maintain the relationship at the time of conflict. Therefore, main point here is both countries must be able to cooperate security issues. However, two countries had faced very cold reality despite of the continued declaration of strategic cooperative partnership. In 2010, two serious incidents such as the sinking of naval ship Cheonan and the shelling of Yeonpyeong Island clearly showed a so-called friendship between Korea and China has been more rhetoric rather than real. maybe they are just a good trading partners rather than true friends. They are just economic cooperative partnership rather than strategic cooperative partnership. However, once awkward relationship has considerably changed since President Park Geun-hye won the presidential election last year, December. And last June this year, President Park had an official state visit to China. It was a trip of heart and trust, 심신지려 in Korean and 신신지류 in Chinese. President Park's visit to China has strengthened the partnership in the name of enrichment of strategic cooperative partnership. Then, apart from this personal mutual respect and fellowship, why South Korea agreed for the enriched partnership? In self-reflection on the past 5 years of Korea's China policy, Korea realized Korea's disappointment and anger at China wasn't useful. No matter how much South Korea criticized, it was difficult to change China's North Korea policy and gain the support to South Korea. And South Korea further concluded that Korea must approach China more rationally rather than emotionally. Based on this, Park government's future China policy can be expected in the three directions. First, the attainment of China's support for the Korean Peninsula trust-building process. The trust-building process is just as its name, process, and cannot be achieved overnight. It mustn't be rushed, and it must act upon justification. It must act what Korea can do, and it mustn't do what Korea cannot do. It is not about changing the other, and action shouldn't be easily carried out because of material economic interest. South Korea should show and persuade China the meaning, the content, and the vision of trust-building process so that gradually China will support. Second, Korea will progress Korea-China trust-building process. There is a famous Chinese saying, friendship or Guanzhong and Bao Shuya, which means very close relationship. Both countries' leaders have a common ground, life value of trust. In order to develop such a relationship, it is necessary to build the trust process between Korea and China, at the same time building the Korean Peninsula trust process between North and South Korea. Third, South Korea will work very hard to establish a new model of Korea-China relationship, 신型 한중 관계, as a learning from a new major power, new model of major power relationship. In the future, I think China will build a new relationship with the neighboring countries as well, 신型 周边 관계. In this, the representative case for China's new neighbor policy can be Korea-China relations. A new model of Korea-China relations could be the basic framework for the future Korea-China relations based on mutual respect, mutual benefit, and peaceful coexistence agreed during President Park's visit to China. So how can we build a new model of Korea-China relations? Assuming from a so-called strategic cooperative partnership, I consider four level of strategic cooperations. First, both countries can establish a cooperative diplomatic relationship for safer environment. For peace and stability in Northeast Asia, collaboration can be achieved for a safer Korean Peninsula. Second, both countries can establish cooperative economic relationship for more developed economic environment. Now we can predict over next few years, $300 billion of trade will occur between two countries through the trade investment cooperation and signing FTA. A win-win economic situation can be possible. Third, both countries can establish a cooperative security relationship for more improved security environment. Both countries can lead human security against non-state and non-military factors, such as disease, illegal immigration, natural disaster, etc. Fourth, both countries can establish a cooperative cultural relationship for more common for more improved cultural environment through the strengthening of ties in humanities and valuable denominator can be expanded. And we can ignite the progress in political and economic security. Last October, President Park met President Xi Jinping at the APEC summit and quoted a poet, a very famous poet, Wang Zhihuan of Tang Dynasty, stating that in order to see a thousand-mile view, we must go another floor, indicating both countries have elevated another level. However, there is a possibility both countries will not be able to go up, rather just drop. If the heart of trust is not properly delivered to each other, the heart will break, and the trust will become mistrust. This will bring the worst outcome to both countries, making the next 4 years very painful. I truly hope President Xi Jinping's visit to Korea next year will be another tour of heart and trust, so that change the unhappy history of the Korean Peninsula into a happy history of Korean Peninsula. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jae-ho. I'll give you some advance warning, the two of you, that after Jun's presentation, I'm going to ask each of you about the impact of Jang Sun-taek's purge and execution on for Chunming for the security competition in Northeast Asia and for you for South Korea-China relations. So you have some time to think about it. So now we will... turn to my colleague Jun Osawa, or Osawa Jun. He's a senior research fellow at the Institute for International Policy Studies in Tokyo, which was set up a long time ago by a distinguished Japanese statesman, Prime Minister Nakasone. Jun?
Thank you, Richard, for your kind introduction to me. It is my great pleasure to have been given chance to speak in front of you. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'll be speaking U.S.-China great rivalry in the maritime arena and also touching upon a little bit about the China-Japan relations based on my research and working paper, which coming up in the next spring on the website of the Brookings. Today, each of us has only 10 minutes or so, so I want to mention a few key points about my research work here in Brookings. Taking a long-range view of history, in 11 of 15 cases of rise of emerging powers, confrontation and war broke out between the emerging and the established powers. The rivalry between emerging and established power was upsetting the previous stable balance of power in the region, result in a struggle for supremacy. So the big question is, will this great rivalry between rising power and ruling power in the world history be applicable to the U.S. and China relations? Sometimes in the history, one side misperception about the intention of the other makes things seriously worse, consequently leading to war, as is the case in Munich Agreement in 1938. The rivalry come not only from a realistic view of the international relation theory or what structural realist thought, but also a lot more from misperceptions about the intention of others caused by some incident, such as the Cowpens case or some brave Chinese fishery boat captain jumped into the Japanese Coast Guard ships. So then action and reaction between China and the U.S. and its allies in a wide variety of fields, from maritime arena to cyber domain, in which the both of the great powers interact. So what kinds of incident or factors influence on these misperceptions and reaction in policies and strategies? And how avoid a negative spiral of misperceptions and wrong assessment of the intention of other side? These are our serious questions at this moment. As its economic and military power increase, China has begun to expand its periphery outward into the ocean to protect the prosperous industrial areas such as the Shanghai along the east coast of China. With the emerging core interest preserving strategy or maritime power strategy, both of which intend purely to ensure its national security, I think, China is in the way of setting up buffer zones on its coastal lines. As you know, the air defense identification zone that China introduced November 23rd is one of the effort to creating this buffer zone. I have put this buffer zone name Great Wall in the air, in the sky, and in the sea. So to protect the South China Sea and the East China Sea from incursion by the U.S. military in times of an emergency, if China will take a buffer zone securement strategy, widely known among Western experts as anti-access area denial strategy, struggle over coastal and littoral area where land power China meets sea power United States will be inevitable in the future. So in this Chinese strategy, what has changed and what has not changed in Chinese foreign policy and activities? And when China changed the strategy I mentioned? And what has changed are 3 points as follows. And the first, emphasizing core interest. Second, new terms of maritime interest over maritime power. Third, the activities of PR and Navy and China's maritime enforcement organization in both East China Sea and South China Sea. The first point, since around late 2008, a Chinese official and scholar have asserted core interest, the concept that something are never negotiable by their very nature. And Michael Swen Carnegie Endowment next to the Brookings analyzed the frequency of the People's Daily article with reference to this core interest and concluded that the frequency of mention of China's core interest notably jumped from 95 articles in 2008 to 260 times in 2009. And second point, the use of new terms of maritime interest. Since around 2010, a Chinese official started to use the new term. the frequency of mentions of China's maritime interest in China dairy notably jumped from 30 articles in 2010 to 58 in 2011 and 100 times in the last year. The third point, along with the usage of the core interest concept, the activities of the PLA, Navy, and China's Maritime Enforcement Organization have increased and expanded in both East and South China Sea. Now, for example, in 2009, Chinese vessels intercepted U.S. Navy Impeccable and its sister ship Victorious in March and May 2009. And the number of frequency that PLA Navy fleet have passed the first island chain, that is from southern part of Japan, Kyushu Island, and Okinawa, Ryukyu Island, Sakishima, Taiwan, and including the Philippines. PLA Navy have passed this island chain to Western Pacific has been increasing two times in 2008 and 2009, four times 2010, and five times 2011, and 11 times in 2012. And this year, during the past 8 months, so same 11 times they passed this first island chain. On the other hand, China has never changed emphasizing its peaceful rights. That point never changed until now. So then, what kind of reaction and strategies changes have happened in the United States and its ally Japan? I will talk Japan first. In response to the Chinese attitude, especially increased the defense expenditure of China and number of frequency of the fleet, past island chain to Western Pacific. Japanese government totally revised its National Defense Program guideline in December 2010. And yesterday, Japanese government settled the new, it is the first time, new national security strategy and revised National Defense Program and with a new Midterm Defense Program. So the focus is to defend southern island, including Ryukyu, Okinawa, Sakishima Island territories. This recent newest national security strategy's goal. In the United States, as you know, Obama administration announced the rebalance strategy in the autumn of 2011. A senior U.S. government official proclaimed that this rebalance strategy is never about China, but regarding to making process of the defense strategic guideline, JOAC, and the air superiority concept in the DOT, this rebalance, however, might mean the rebalance of the rise of China. So at the same time, China feels a kind of fear that U.S. and its allies would contain the rise of China, especially China has serious concern about the U.S. air superiority concept and fear that Washington sees China as a peer competitor or the future threat of the United States. Now, for example, in Chinese defense paper, defense white paper, biannually published in 2012, last year, contains some of the new type of messages. These terms did not used in the last 2010 version. So it point out the recent balance strategy of the U.S. as that the U.S. is adjusting its Asia-Pacific security strategy and the regional landscape is undergoing profound changes and some country has strengthened its Asia-Pacific allies, military alliance, and expands its military presence in the region. So that the Chinese fear. I think I'm running out of time. I'd like to put my conclusion into a few words. The rivalry between great powers come a lot of more from a misperception about the intention of the other, easily caused by even small incident, action and reaction, in the wide variety of fields, the maritime arena to cyber domain. I don't mention, but I put the opinion paper in the website, so please refer that. And second point, unfounded fears from the distrust each other easily make countries overestimating the intention of others or exaggerating its own defending policy. That would drive great powers in a dangerous direction, confrontation, or even war. So to avoid this negative spiral of misperceptions and wrong assessment of the intention of other side, China, U.S., and its allies, Japan, have to take measures as follows. First, handle every incident, even small case, carefully. Second, keep from assertive activities such as military drill nearby other countries and frightening unilateral measures such as the ADIZ we saw recently. Third, do net assessment about the capability and the intention of others without any prejudgment. And fourth, enhance communication between China, U.S., and its allies, Japan, in any kind of level, from top leaders, Navy to Navy, Air Force to Air Force, people to people, as like Jimmy from China and me had a great battle or a great talk here in the Brookings. So that's my that's all for my presentation. Thank you very much for your patience.
So thank you very much. So to bring things right up to date, Zhenming, I know that we know very little about what's actually going on in North Korea, but what is your guess as to how the disappearance of Mr. Jong will affect the security competition among the other countries? Will it make it more severe, or will it perhaps in some way reduce it?
Thank you. I also know little about North Korea's domestic politics, but I can have some speculation maybe.
Okay.
With the recent round of the political push, maybe we can say, which culminated with the removal of the Zhang Zhenzhe, the once powerful uncle of the leader. I think North Korea is likely to be more uncertain in its way to address North Korea nuclear issue.
It's likely to be what?
Uncertain, oh. Maybe more uncertain. Mm-hmm. In the eyes of many international scholars, observers, I think Zhang Zhenzhe is a typical North Korean who knows well about China and the way to engage in international negotiation. And I think the posture of Zhang might be lending more centralized power to Xinjiang to pursue a sensible international and domestic policy. In the future, though, it might also be facilitating a cornering and a stubborn policy towards the nuclear issue. And it remains to be seen if this will create more difficulties of the international community to persuade DPRK leaders to abandon a nuclear weapons program.
Okay, thank you. That's a very honest answer. I appreciate that. So, Jay Ho, how will this event affect the trust-building process between Seoul and Beijing? How will Jang Son-taek's removal and execution affect the trust-building process? And again, we know very little, so all you can do is speculate.
Let me briefly touch on the Jang Son-taek issue first. As indicated by North Korean Central News Agency, Jang may be executed for several reasons, maybe women and money problems. But this is not own, his not own problem, but applies to other leadership too. The allegation that Jang handed over North Korean natural resource to China was not a decision made by Jang alone, but also North Korean leaders too. Jang may be a scapegoat to take a responsibility for North Korea's economic difficulties. However, there must be some other reasons. We just don't know. Without that, there's no reason to execute Jang Seung-tae within only 3 days. There must be something Kim Kyung-hee must have agreed with Kim Jong-un. Then
explain who Kim Jong-hui is.
Kim Kyung-hee is Kim Jong-un's younger sister.
Kim Jong-il's younger sister.
Yeah. Kim Jong-il's younger sister. Oh, no, yeah. Kim Jong-il's younger sister. How can we understand the North Korean such a brutal behavior? Then I would like to start with my understanding the character of North Korea first. North Korea's slogan of Gangseong Daeguk is strong, prosperous, big country. However, when you change Song and De to characters with same pronunciation with different Chinese character, it takes a different meaning. It means fake country with a strong personality. So North Korea puts the regime survival first. In order to maintain regime survival, North Korea can do everything. So I'm really concerned the further move made by Kim Jong-un. Then how can we China and South Korea build further strengthen further relationship? Last June, President Park visited China. We agreed four agreement. One is study more and FTA. The second one is strengthen ties in humanities, and the third one is strengthen strategic communications. Then we might go further to strengthen those ties first. Then, of course, the North Korean issue is very important. Maybe I can give you more detailed strategic cooperation between two countries.
Thank you. So now we're going to open it up to questions from the audience. Hang on just a second. First of all, for those of you who are standing in the back, we have some empty seats up here. You can come up and relax and once I call on you, please identify yourself. Please wait for the mic before you do anything. If you want to pose a question to a particular panelist, please identify that person. Also, tell us where you're from. So who'd like to go first? So we'll do the gentleman right here.
Hi, Chen Weihua from China Daily. I have a question for Huang and Jun. Given this South Korea and Japan depend so much on U.S. security umbrella, so To what extent do you think, Seoul and Tokyo can exercise sort of independence in their foreign policies, especially regarding the security issue? I mean, we're dealing with China, relating to China. And I wouldn't generally represent the Chinese because there are so many diversified views. I would feel there is some, at least feel that when they think, on any issue, three of your countries are sort of united against China as allies, trilateral allies, whatever. So there will be a fed up feeling among some Chinese. So your comment. Thank you.
I'll touch upon the 2 points. And what extent our country have independent foreign policy, right? The first, your question. I think Japan doesn't so much rely on the alliance. And despite the Japanese foreign policy three pillars, one of them is the to base the diplomacy depend on the based on the U.S. Japan security alliance, but as you know, we have and Tokyo enjoys a huge room to strengthen ties with European countries and India and Middle East and Australia, and also. We started strategic dialogue with Russia. Unfortunately, we keep doors open to China. Tokyo eager to have in-depth dialogue with Beijing, because in these 4 decades we have enjoyed a good relationship with China. So only in these 5 years, the relationship Beijing and Tokyo getting worse and worse. So based on some kind of misperception of the intention of the other that I mentioned in my presentation. So second point is U.S., Japan, and South Korea. Imagined alliance against for containing China. I think this is the imagination by Chinese people themselves, because we don't want to take such a kind of containment policy against China. Because, for example, we in these 4 decades. We gave total $40 billion official development to Beijing to enhance to make their economy more prosperous way. If we had such a kind of containment mind, we didn't do such a kind of huge amount of ODAs. And also now, even now, because Tokyo stopped the official development aid because the Chinese economy developed in middle or farther away. But even now, we aid such a kind of environment improvement technology to Beijing. And we send many technicians to whole of the mainland China to improve the water and the air environment circumstance. So the second point is we don't mind to have such a kind of containment allies. Thank you.
Thank you, Chiho.
Do you think now U.S., Japan, and South Korea will triangle alliance? I'm not sure you can answer to that. As you know, Korea and China, and Korea and Japan has now, we are now suffering certain difficulties. maybe we cannot go further without resolving some critical issues. Maybe still it takes a little more time for such an imaginary alliance. Of course, that is one side, but the other side, since President Park came to office, then certainly Korea-China relationship has improved a lot. Just one concern is still we didn't get information in advance. As you know, China's ADIV issue, but relatively speaking, the issue certainly damaged. But still, there is a common understanding between two leaders to minimize damages. So I think the South Korean really hope. Get through these small challenges first. Then maybe President Xi visit Seoul next year. Then maybe we can do something more cooperation.
Okay, thank you. The woman right here. Okay.
Hi, Rachel Oswald, Global Security Newswire. I've got one question for Mr. Zhang, and then a follow-up that I'd like the wider panel to respond to. Do you feel, in the wake of the unexpected execution of Kim's uncle, and as you mentioned in your remarks, that China and the United States should hold discussions to deal with a wide variety of scenarios in the Korean Peninsula, that it's time for Beijing to consider possible plans to create spheres of influence inside North Korea in the event of a collapse of the Kim regime, with South Korea and the U.S. Having one sphere of influence and China perhaps a different one? And then to the panel, could you discuss whether you feel that Pyongyang's response to the execution, where it publicized it and said that the uncle was purged because he tried to usurp rule, kind of acknowledging there was a threat to Kim, and that, you know, the vaunted, not everybody adored Kim, whether that is hurting the long-term brand of the Kim dynasty.
Sorry. I think it's still too far away for to make evaluation that the removal of the Zhang Zhenze to say that North Korea's regime is collapsing. I think it's too far away from that point. But I think for China and the United States, it's imperative for the two countries to cooperate and to respond any future unexpected scenarios happening on North Korea. And
do you think that the U.S. and China and South Korea should agree in advance that if North Korea does start to collapse, China will take over one part and U.S. another part and South Korea another part? That's what I took your sphere of influence question to mean. Not to put you on the spot.
Yeah. I think it's too extreme to say so, and too early to say so by now. Because for North Korea, right now, although we have some evidence of the economic and social difficulties for this country, but you will find that in the past the North Korea regime survived strongly, more strong than anyone can expect it. And I think it's difficult. It's different from some other cases like Iran. You know, sanctions right now, sanctions, international sanctions has limited effect. It's more limited effect than sanctions posed on Iran. So that tells something about the endurance and the persistence of the regime.
So, Jay Ho and Jun, do you think that the purge and execution of Jang Sung-taek indicates that the, or do you think the legitimacy of the Kim family regime is hurt by these actions? Yes or no?
I think it's still stable.
Still stable? Okay, Jun?
My view is different because the, as my bio, you can see that I'm intelligence analyst, Minister of Foreign Affairs, 7 years ago. At that time, I investigated some North Korean economy as the household like. And we found that North Korea usually import $3 billion U.S. dollars and export only $2 billion. So how to get other $1 billion from the international financial market? They cannot, because they didn't pay debt in these two decades. So some other activity to get the foreign currency is needed. And I've heard that Jang Sung-taek is some kind of key person to get the foreign currency in North Korean regimes. So I don't think without him, the North Korean regime can get enough money to import the goods from outside the world. So that the reason I think the North Korean regime will be unstable after the execution of Jang Sung-taek. Okay. Thank you.
Jay Taylor, up here.
Thank you very much. Jay Taylor, independent writer. My question, I think, is to the panel generally. In the early 1980s, when I was in Beijing, almost any foreign service or foreign ministry officer I talked with, or in the Academy of Sciences, American experts, they would all agree that U.S. Power in Asia, meaning its supremacy in the Pacific, that is, and its various alliances, except for the one with Taiwan, were in very much in China's interest. And my impression is today that still is the general feeling of certainly the experts, but even I think Xi Jinping makes it rather plain. At the same time, China's power has grown, and we see it being more assertive when it comes to issues of sovereignty, which is different from looking at balance of power issues in the Pacific and in East Asia generally. So I wonder if your opinion, what do you hear from the Chinese? Would you say that does reflect their view or not, still today?
Jay Ho, do you want to start? What's your impression of Chinese views of the U.S. alliances with Japan and Korea and Australia? Are they in China's interests or not in China's interests? Did you understand?
Yes, sir.
Okay, why don't you start first?
Okay, I think your question is related to the reporter from China Daily, right? So now China leaders and military officials, because I have attended several international conferences with the PLA officers in these 3 years, and they fear that U.S., Japan, and South Korea, because these are old Cold War allies, and the U.S. would like to rebalance people to the Pacific. So they told me that Chinese people, that country don't have any allies, even with Russia, it's not allies. So Chinese people feel fear to be contained by the old Cold War mentality alliance. So this Cold War alliance means the presence, equally means the presence of the United States in the Western Pacific, right? So I think the most of Beijing view is a serious concern about the strengthening the U.S. presence in the Western Pacific, especially.
Okay, how do you agree?
I think being number two is a very difficult job. after Soviet Union, then Japan, then now it's China. Since the financial crisis in 2008, China certainly pushed it back to the stage. I think some China has to face a number of challenges from U.S. and its allies. So China didn't like the concept G2. I really like explain G2. If saying in Chinese expression G2, if you pronounce in Chinese means G2. In other words, jealousy. So now U.S. and other allies, Chinese feel U.S. and its allies push it, drag China into stage. But from my understanding, Chinese feel this is an inevitable process. Then they feel a kind of loneliness, guduo. And China never make an alliance. But if you look at the borders surrounding China, China doesn't have many friends. Take South Korea as an example. We are also having a dilemma in difficult times. We have to look at both sides. But this is not only South Korea's problem, to other neighbors too. China continuously rise, but China must have to overcome many challenges. Then in the process of the rise, China needs a new friend. Maybe South Korea will be very good candidate to understand both sides. To South Korea, but we are not very actively interested in the democratic alliance. But please understand, such a small country, just living next door, such a big country, maybe you understand. But we also share all the universal value too.
Jimmy, what do you think is China's view of U.S. alliances?
In my view, if United States, Japan, and South Korea alliance can be developed in a way that this alliance would be constructive to the peace and stability in East Asia, I think it's a good thing. The ideal scenario is U.S.-China cooperation and the U.S.-led alliance can develop parallelly. And I think, unfortunately, in China, both in academic and the policy communities, maybe we have the mixed perceptions. On the one hand, the U.S.-led alliance has some positive effects. U.S.-led alliance, in many ways, provide some public goods and facilitate stability and peace and development in this region. On the other hand, we have found they have some negative effects. For example, right now, under the circumstances of the U.S. rebalancing strategy, some may argue that some disputes between China and some countries who are U.S. allies might be deteriorating because of perception that these disputes can be used by U.S. allies. They are emboldened to take even more tougher policy toward those disputing issues. And the other example for the recent tension concerning Japan's attitude toward Diaoyu Senkaku Islands, you will find that maybe for many Chinese in many Chinese view, Japan is likely to capitalize the U.S.-Japan alliance to pursue its own national security interests or objectives. For example, Japan want to legalize its maneuver, legalize its territorial claim over the Diaoyu Senkaku Island after the nationalization of those islands. And U.S., although has always insisted that it takes no steps, it takes no sides toward this dispute, but they said that the U.S. security treaty covered those disputes. So it is likely that the U.S.-Japan alliance can be capitalized by Japan. So that is negative effects, I think. So it's imperative for United States sometimes to rein in Japan's risky behavior.
Okay, thank you. I have the gentleman in the red tie, then I'll come here, and then I'll go over there.
David Wu, former member of Congress. I wanted to follow up on the gentleman from China Daily's question and Dr. Osawa's answer. In my conversations in China, the very strong perception there is that, well, there is this incredibly strong antagonism toward Japan, and that is a mild way to put it. And the perception is that Japan would not be behaving this way without the United States actively pushing Japan to do that. And I have explained to people high and low that our view is we have no position, that we want a peaceful solution, and our tail is caught in a crack because of the defense treaty. And, you know, so often politics drives policy and perceptions drive politics. And Dr. Osawa gave the Japanese view. I think my read of the Chinese view is reasonably active. And given this vast difference in perception, what do you all think is the risk of miscalculation and active conflict as a result?
Okay. And first of all, I'd like to mention one point. The United States has enjoyed the freedom of speech. Also, Japan enjoyed freedom of speech. But in Beijing, there is no freedom of speech in the media. But they have freedom speech against Japan. So Chinese media and Chinese people can make a blog or a news report even without any evidence. They can criticize strongly Tokyo or Japan and then carry some hawkish view that is not the main view in Tokyo. They carry such a kind of hawkish writer's view to the article. So these kind of negative spiral are now going on between Beijing and Tokyo that affect the people's mind and perception of each other. So that's my first point. From Tokyo, I think we are living next to China. China is getting larger and larger and larger and large, and expand its periphery toward us, because the Chinese fishing boat is coming into the East China Sea near our territory, our waters, to catching the fishery. So we feel some kind of pressure from the continuous double-digit development of China. So I am some kind of a fat man, and if I will fatting, and then I push the Ms. Richard to the other side. So I think we feel such a kind of emotional feeling, will make the Japanese view more pessimistic way. And the risk, I think the in the struggle with between China and Japan, and 2010, we captured the fishery boatman and bring him into the court, but it has never happened, right? Because the usually Chinese people entering the Senkaku Daiba Island is arrested, but directly returned to mainland China. So that's the usual custom between China and Japan. But at that time, the government is DPJ new drivers. they didn't have any experience to drive the government, so they mistook the small measures, not in usual custom way, but they did a new measures to dealing with the Chinese people at that time. So after that, there is a struggle, tension between Japan and China like this, and Japanese Tokyo purchased the Iran, and China take the countermeasure to send a coast guard to the territorial water of the Iran. So we send more ships to the Iran. So that's the reason in this September, there is eight from mainland China, eight from Japan, and like a cats and mouse race around the Iran. So the tension is little by little, the higher and higher and higher and higher. So we fear that at some point, there is misorder by the captain or commander himself. I don't know which side. I don't want to say which side, but in some point in the future, such kind of tension is getting rise and rise. So only a few mistake of the control make a serious crash between the island. Yeah. Thank you.
Jimmy, do you think Do you agree that there's a danger of some kind of conflict because of the tensions in the maritime area?
Yes, of course. I think it's a danger to the stability in the East Asia, East China Sea. But I would like to also make some comments about the Diaoyu-Sankoku Islands disputes. I think last year's nationalization by Japan, it was a broader but provocative maneuver with a view to legalize Japan's territorial claim over the islands. And unfortunately, the United States failed to rein in Japanese actions. And maybe in this case, Americans actually support Japan because they hope to maintain alliance credibility to Japan and put a wedge into Japan-China relations. And I think China's announcement of ADs can be explained by a way to deny Japan's nationalization and the legalization effects. And Japan, on the other side, as we know, refused to admit that there was even an existence of disputes. So I think this is a starting point for us to analyze the Diaoyu-Sankoku Island disputes.
Okay, I'd like to take two questions over here. This gentleman here and the gentleman right back there. Try to keep your questions short.
Ken Meyer, Gord Wildox. A common venue for the settlement of disputes over international borders is the International Court of Justice. Colombia and Nicaragua, for instance, took their dispute over some islands in the Caribbean there. What is the position of China and Japan and the United States as far as taking the dispute over the Diaoyu-Sankoku to the ICJ?
And the other one here.
Thank you very much. My name is Atsushi Okudera from Asahi Shimbun, the newspaper reporter from Asahi Shimbun, Japanese daily. I'm just wondering, about the new model of major power between China and the United States. And at the same time, Mr. Jai Ho is talking about new model of relationship between South Korea and China. This word is used by former President Hu Jintao last year. I think it's not the new word, but from the Sunnyland, any dialogue between U.S. and Japan, U.S. and Korea, China, it's been used. And at the first moment, the United States didn't say major power, new model of major power, but usually, and recently, Sudanese, the official is always start to use this word. So, and my question is, I think this is a kind of prevent a severe conflict and have a mutual respect. But do you think the question is going to Dongjin Dashi, Hu Jiaoshou, Mr. Zhong? What is the new model of major power from the viewpoint from the Chinese side? And what's the main point? And they still have already have a mutual respect, or they still have a huge gap, especially in security issues and maritime issues. And what is the new model between South Korea and China? Thank you.
First on China's and Japan's view of going to the ICJ.
Okay, I think the Tokyo's policy about the Sankoku Island, whether the Tokyo willingly bring to this issue to the ICJ, it is ambiguous because the Chinese government have not claimed this issue to bring the ICJ because they would like to solve the issue bilaterally. That's the Chinese position. So we are the side of the acceptance of the claim. So we have the effective control over the island. So we are waiting the, whether China will bring the issue or not. But in my personal opinion, Japanese government bring the same kind of territorial dispute issue, Dr. Takeshima, to ICJ three times in these 50 years, in 1950s, 1960s, and this year. So we are the country that bury the justice of international society. So we would like to solve any kind of problem in negotiation or the debate in the international society. We don't want to use, we never want to use any force to solve the problem. So regarding this Japan-South Korea issues, I think if China bring this territorial issue to the ICJ, Tokyo will accept to debate in the ICJ, like Ukraine, Romania, or other territorial issues debated in the ICJ. That's my answer.
Jimmy, do you have any comment on this?
I think for the disputes of the Senkaku Islands, I think one of the starting points of our discussion is that neither side can accept the other side to have fully sovereignty over these disputing islands. And the first step for us to address this issue is for Japan to admit that there was a dispute, as we all know. So that is my brief response.
I'm going to answer the question on the new pattern of big country relations. I think the challenge is to put some content into this concept. I think that it's not clear what the content is, and before it can become a real pattern, you have to know what the pattern is. So I had two questions here in the middle of the room, and that may be all we have time for.
Thank you. Michael Colopy, International Commerce Consultants. A writer said the other day that as China has risen, its horizon becomes broader and more distant, so it solved its national control issue in 49. It solved its decision to integrate with the rest of the world in the 70s. And now it is viewing an opportunity to revisit the Treaty of Shimonoseki in 1895. Does anyone have a comment on that being the fundamental historical bedrock problem in the question of the Diaoyu Senkaku dispute?
Can you put it clearly about your questions?
Does China want to revisit the issue of the Treaty of Shimonoseki or the Magong Tiaoyue, and particularly with respect to the Diaoyu Islands?
I think, yes, I think those disputes are very tough problem for any countries. But Diaoyu Islands disputes is very complex. And if you look at the history of the source of these disputes, and you will find that it's very complex. And you can date back to the 100 years ago, the rivalry between China and Japan. And it concerns some legal, historical, geographical debates among with China, Japan, and Chinese Taipei, and this is very complex. But I think you mentioned that case. I think it's helpful for us to understand how to have a better resolution of these disputes. It might be illuminating.
Okay. Okay, final question, a gentleman right there.
My name is Don Kirk. I spent some time in South Korea. I'm just wondering, getting back to the question of Mr. Zhang, he visited Beijing in August of 2012, I believe, but he did not go in May of 2013 when Mr. Che Yong-he went to Beijing. I wonder whether this indicated a significant shift in China's outlook from the Hu Jintao administration to the Xi Jinping administration to the Xi Jinping presidency, and whether China had ceased to support Mr. Zhang, was no longer interested in him, and would prefer to deal with someone perhaps more pliable and perhaps more amenable to China's military ambitions in the region. Thank you.
Don, you're being a little bit misleading on how long you spent in South Korea. Does anybody want to speculate on China's view of Zhang Song-taek and whether it changed? Said he is offering the hypothesis that China it wasn't viewing Zhang Song-taek as favorably as it had before, starting last year. Do you know?
I heard that he was taken custody early this year, but no idea last year. Okay. Maybe I can tell a little bit about Zhang or
whatever you want.
Maybe later.
Okay. Do you want? Do you have any views? Okay. I think that with that, we're going to have to bring the program to a close. It's our last program of the year. I want to thank you all for coming today and coming on other occasions. Your support is very important to us because you ask really good questions and you force our speakers to think. But please join me in thanking our three panelists. And together we'd like to wish all of you